This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. H.L. Mencken had a complicated relationship with religion. He skewered religious pieties and famously despised some high-profile religious figures, but he took religion and religious people seriously. E.G. Hart is author of Damning Words, The Life and Religious Times of H.L. Mencken. We spoke earlier this month.
At one point in your book, you describe Mencken's naysaying as one part village atheist and one part town drunk. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, his objections to Christianity, particularly, since that's what the book is mainly about, are the kind of criticisms that you would find in 19th century skeptics from the Robert Ingersoll variety or Mark Twain variety. But then he did it with a kind of flair, a kind of swagger that I guess that's what I was trying to capture with the drunk analogy. And depending on the degree of his drunkenness, it had a charm to it, I think. My sense is that the Christian readers of Mencken just never really came around to having much regard for him because he was just too irreverent and too skeptical. Obviously, he had a following, especially in the 20s, among secularists of various kinds, but I think probably even some sort of nominal Protestants of a kind. Which I think is really unfortunate that the serious believers didn't try to engage him more. And it's the style that prevented that from happening. And it was an abrupt change of style. It was a sort of style that wasn't even well received in literary circles. I mean, he was engaged in literary criticism that the academics, whether at Harvard or at University of Illinois, you just didn't do literary criticism that way. It cut down in some ways on Mencken's engagement by serious people, but it also gave him a much wider audience.
Now, when you talk about his audience, it's worth noting, as you do in your book, that Mencken was one of the earliest, perhaps, writers of signed editorials. And what difference did that make?
The short answer would be I'm not entirely sure, other than that the standards of journalism were such that they just didn't sign them. But I think he injected a kind of his own personal style outlook into those editorials that made it possible to cross that divide, and then for him to gain a following by virtue of this is the guy that we want to read. So Teachout really makes the point well, I think, in his biography, Terry Teachout, that Mencken really does create the style of the op-ed page in a way. I mean, he's not the only one doing it, but he's the one who gets it up and going and then actually makes it a nationally syndicated thing.
One of his early targets was G.K. Chesterton. Who was that, and why was Mencken so enamored of being critical of him?
Well, Chesterton was an English writer who wrote a variety of things. Crime novels, I guess. I'm not as familiar with all of Chesterton's corpus. He eventually became known, though, as a defender of Christianity. He converted from a kind of nominal Anglicanism to Roman Catholicism. He was also a journalist, so he was treading on Mencken's territory a little bit there, and I guess he also engaged in a bit of literary criticism. And Chesterton didn't register large on Mencken's radar, but early on, when Mencken started writing literary criticism book reviews, Chesterton was one of the figures that he took on, and I think there was, as was often the case with many of his criticisms of Christian writers, it was a combination of, one, the theology or the teaching of Christianity was beyond belief, which I think is actually a point that Christians themselves need to take seriously. We can maybe return to that. But so Christianity itself was beyond belief, but also Christianity encouraged a kind of moralism that really infringed on the way Mencken liked to live. Prohibition was coming in the United States, and I'm not in any way suggesting Chesterton was behind that, but Mencken saw in many Christian writers, among them Chesterton, a kind of moralism also in the literary world that he didn't like and he thought was holding the United States back and preventing people like him from either climbing the ranks or enjoying the kind of prominence that he wanted.
Mencken also singled out both Woodrow Wilson and Prohibition. With respect to Wilson, what was his criticism? Presumably war played a role,
right.
High taxes played a role, but there was a certain moralism to Woodrow Wilson's tenure as well.
Yes. I mean, Mencken's criticisms of the progressives are really quite stunning, actually. And he winds up adopting political views much more akin to a states' rights position, which can, I guess, dovetail, depending on how you want to slice libertarianism, can dovetail with that. Very much, though, on the side of limited government, what the Constitution was meant to do, what the kind of integrity and autonomy the states were designed to have. So there's all that made Mencken suspicious of the progressives. But when you throw into that then the war and the scale of the war and the justifications for it very much on a idealistic or moralistic grounds, and then add to that as well Mencken was German-American, and the way that many people have come to understand that was that he was loosely German-American. His father and grandfather were not necessarily part of the German-American community in Baltimore. They, in some ways, thought of themselves as a better kind of German-American than the immigrants living in Baltimore, and they liked to separate themselves. So even when Mencken was baptized as a child as part of the convention of the family, he was baptized in an Anglican or Episcopalian church, not in a Lutheran church. But over time, as he began to make his way in literary circles and he saw the dominance of New England and associated that with Puritanism and associated that with English Protestantism, he did an early book, one of the first books in English on Friedrich Nietzsche. I think he came later to a kind of German sensibility and identification with that side of his past. So that when it came to a war between England or Great Britain and Germany, Mencken took the side much more of Germany and even wrote a really important piece in 1916 published in the Atlantic Monthly magazine of all places. You can't get much more WASPy than that, very much defending the Kaiser in a way. So Wilson represents in some ways a turning point for Mencken's own sense of his Germanness in relation to American identity.
All right. So the other great progressive project, Prohibition, was he always a critic?
Yes. He's writing reviews of books in the aughts and the teens, books sort of making the case why alcohol scientifically is so destructive, et cetera. And he thinks it's thinly veiled moralism. So he's very much on the lookout for that. But he's also inveterately opposed to the moralism that was even in some of the sex education materials coming out there. And Mencken was not a prude, but he just thought that this was taking something that was actually kind of mystical or much more human, and you couldn't compartmentalize it in scientific categories the way the sex ed people tried to. So he was on the lookout for those sorts of arguments well before Prohibition. But if among historical figures with whom I'd like to have a meal, Mencken would be one of them, but it wouldn't be the same kind of meal without beer or wine or whiskey or something. And I mean, one of the charming aspects of Mencken's life was he participated in something called the Saturday Night Club, which was a group of a few professional musicians and mainly amateur. Mencken played the piano, and they played symphonic music in someone's home, but they regularly took breaks and consumed large quantities of beer and large quantities of food and had a rollicking good time. And since it seems to me alcohol contributes to that, obviously in excess it can do damaging things, but so Mencken really just enjoyed, I think, life, and alcohol was part of it.
You mentioned sex education and Mencken's criticism of how it had been presented. I think a lot of people could be forgiven for thinking that Mencken was not a romantic, based on sort of the hard-nosed views that he had. He was very critical of married men in particular.
Right.
But he was a romantic.
He was. In fact, he married late in life. He had many jokes about how when you turn 50, you become more susceptible to marriage. He had a number of affairs, and the woman whom he married, Sarah Hart, was a tragic case. She had tuberculosis. They knew it when they married, and they only gave her 2 years. She wound up living 5 years, and it was a great loss when she finally died. But I think Mencken liked to posture himself as someone who was hard-nosed, skeptical, could not be wooed in a way. But on the other hand, there is a sensitive side to him, and which is one of the things that I wanted to bring out in this book on religion, that Mencken was actually much more interested in and sympathetic, empathetic at least, to religion, romance, and other things that we don't associate with him because he has this iconoclastic reputation as someone who has no time for, again, romance or religion. But he did. Another example of this, aside from his own marriage, is toward the end of his writing career, he started, and this is in the Library of America series, his Days trilogy, his memoirs about growing up. So there's Happy Days about his youth, Newspaper Days about his newspaper career, and then Heathen Days about the rest of his career. And in those memoirs, there's a really delicate side to the way he remembers parts of his life, especially in Happy Days. His chapters on growing up in Baltimore have a magical side to them that shows a man, at least later in life, but chances are as a boy as well, who was alert to a number of the things in life that you fall in love with. So he was not immune to those sorts of feelings, but again, prided himself, I think, on posing as someone who was not could not be caught up in that.
One of the most sort of iconic events that has been captured and retold in plays and movies about that contains Mencken was the trial of John T. Scopes in Dayton, Tennessee, the so-called Scopes Monkey Trial. And I like to point out to people I know that this was a moment where the national broadcast of an event where we would think of maybe like the Clarence Thomas hearings or O.J. Simpson driving a white Ford Bronco across America. The Scopes Monkey Trial was that kind of event, and Mencken was front and center. In fact, played a key part in that, in detailing and chronicling that event. Can you describe sort of his attitude going in and his thoughts about, in particular, William Jennings Bryan and the sort of moralism of states that were trying to prohibit evolutionary education in public schools?
Right. It is an iconic moment, both in some ways in American history, but also in Mencken's life. The movie Inherit the Wind that came out in 1960 features a character played by the actor's name is escaping me right now, but the character's name is E.F. Hornbeck, I believe, and it's very much based on Mencken, and that's how Americans probably remember Mencken most, if they remember him at all. And he was he helped to organize the defense of Scopes. He cooperated with Clarence Darrow and talked to ACLU people back then. So he was very much on the side of science against religion. He also had a lifelong opposition to William Jennings Bryan, who he just didn't care for that kind of populism. These were common people. He considered himself a better person than that. So there was a kind of class hierarchy distinction going on, and throw on top of that Bryan's moralism. There were other reasons why Mencken didn't like Bryan. I also wondered if maybe Mencken was jealous of Bryan's popularity. As popular as Mencken was, I'm not sure that he still had the readers or fans that Bryan did. So he was there. He was help planning the defense of the trial. He went down and gave extensive coverage. But also, if you read his pieces about the trial, but also his reporting about backwoods country, the kind of revival meetings he would go out and observe. Again, Mencken had a power of observation about human endeavors that was not simply critical, but he was fascinated by what he called the show of American life, and he reported on that show very well. It wasn't simply dismissive. The descriptions can actually be pretty captivating. But anyway, having said all that, Mencken was very much bound up with the trial for good reason. And then 5 days after the trial, when William Jennings Bryan dies, Mencken writes an obituary essay that is, I think, the most vicious thing he read. And it's hard to read it and not wince. And it's hard to read it and not find it. There's very little humor in it. And usually, even when Mencken is at his best, there's at least a little line here and there that lets you know he's having some fun. But this was pretty darn vindictive. So for a variety of reasons, Bryan's progressivism, his religion, his going after what was so obviously science and not religion, and the idea of even teaching Genesis in a science classroom in high school is pretty bizarre, and Mencken had probably pretty good reasons for thinking that, but he couldn't contain himself in a way.
What were some of the last things that Mencken wrote about religion? You said that he married late in life and found himself being one of those older men who is more susceptible to marriage, but what were some of the last things he wrote about people of faith?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's a good question, because probably what he wrote most at the end of his life were his Days trilogy, his memoirs. And I was this is maybe 6 years before he has a massive stroke that in 1947, I believe, that incapacitates him from reading or writing the rest of his life, which I cannot fathom how he lived a decade longer without being able to read or write. I mean, he could function in many ways, but he couldn't do that. So his most sustained pieces of writing were the Days trilogies. And at the end of Heathen Days, he comments on four different religious figures from Charles Coughlin, the priest who was an anti-New Deal person, to I can't remember the other guys, but he couldn't let religion alone. So he was writing about religion even then. But even in the first of the Days trilogy, his Happy Days trilogy, he has a very funny description of going to Sunday school. His father, a lifelong agnostic if not atheist, sent his two boys to a Methodist Sunday school in the neighborhood, and Mencken later discovered it was because his father wanted to get a nap. The boys were too rambunctious, so he let them go to the Methodist. They kept sending around people to get the boys to go to Sunday school. And Mencken's description of actually singing the gospel songs is really very funny, but it's also empathetic in a way. And Menken will refer to those songs later on any number of places. He'll throw out a line from one of those songs or a title from one of those songs. It wasn't as if he didn't want to have anything to do with it, and he couldn't stand having that as part of his experience, but it was just part of his being American, acknowledging that. So I would say in those some of those chapters in his Days trilogy, he writes about his encounter with Sunday school or black revival preachers who were preaching on the street corners in Baltimore, or then some of his encounters with religious people later on in his career. And that's where you find it. And again, it's a mix of skepticism, humor, and empathy.
It seems like we are in a similar time in a way, that there is this strong strain of moralism, of wanting to impose a certain will on the public because we know best and you don't. And I wonder often how somebody like H.L. Mencken would handle a situation like as we face today.
I think about that a lot, partly because I have to give other book talks here and there, and I'm gearing up to give the Menken Day talk next year in Baltimore, or this year, later this year on Menken Day. My sense is that Menken would be offensive to both the left and the right, even today, because the right has its own moral grid through which it runs a lot of its discussions, but then the left, especially now with the president as such as he is, I've never seen so much of an effort to recover decency in social life. I think both sides engage in a kind of pretense, and I think Menken was a really astute observer, had a real feel for when human beings were engaging in pretense. So raising standards higher than they need to be, or posing yourself as a moral person as holier than thou. Not everyone reads Menken this way, but I sense a lot of self-deprecation in his own work, and that he doesn't try to present himself as that. So I think he would have so many targets out there. It's impossible to imagine that. And I think he would continue to be making fun of America's. But I also think he thought it was America's congenital default position to go back to a kind of moralistic outlook.
D.G. Hart is author of Damning Words: The Life and Religious Times of H.L. Mencken. Subscribe to and rate this podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.